Good morning. We're looking at the book of Revelation, and we're continuing kind of where Pastor Jason left off last week, where we looked at Thomas's response to Christ when he was resurrected. Thomas felt him and said, "Wow, this is my Lord and my God." Continuing, we are looking not necessarily at the physical aspect of Christ, but also the heavenly aspect of Christ. And John gives us a title in his revelation. Now, when I think of titles, I'm reminded of a class this semester where I had typed up my paper, and it was about a week before it was due. I was actually ahead of schedule. I saved it, and now it was time for me to print it so I could take it to class. And of course, I couldn't find it. So I tried as best as I could, but it was so far back that I couldn't find it. So I started searching in the hard drive, and I finally was able to find it. I recognized that the title that I had for the paper didn't match the title of the project, so I had to rewrite that and then print it out and send it. Now, for me, when that happened, I recognized that we use titles all the time. We use titles for our books, for our movies, for our art, for the articles we read, and then we also use titles for ourselves. The jobs we have, if you're in school, what grade you're in, we use and apply titles to ourselves. Also, the position of a sport has a title, whether you're in first base or whether you're a catcher or a pitcher or a goalie. We use titles and apply titles to people all the time. Now, I think when we look at titles, you could use titles in one of two ways. One is to make yourself look really good. I'm the exec HR of this company. I'm number one. I get to be in the decision-making of the company because I'm the exec and I'm at the top. Well, obviously, that title, I'm using it to make myself look number one. And then sometimes we use titles intentionally to get out of things, to make ourselves look lesser. Well, I'm just the exec HR. I'm not really in that department, though. So I'm just the exec of HR. I mean, it's a good title, but that doesn't apply to me. You know, as a student, one, I could say, I know everything because I'm studying, or I could say, I don't know everything because I'm just still studying. We humans use titles in different ways, and titles often change. But as a student, that title will change, hopefully, from student to graduate and from graduate to employee. Our titles change within the job place as well. Either the title itself changes or you get a new job or a different job. And also when you're playing sports, your title often changes, sometimes even during the same game. You might move from first base to shortstop, from the front runner in soccer to the goalie. So when we look at titles for humanity, for humans, we see that titles that apply to us can change. They can be changed and altered and flexible. But I think John would tell us that the title applied to Christ, the title he uses for Christ, it is a title that doesn't change. The book of Revelation, when John was writing this, he was exiled into Patmos on a little island. And the Romans thought, well, if we just exiled you, no problem. You're in that area and we won't have to worry about it. Obviously, that wasn't the case. He was probably exiled in about 95 AD. And we see that all throughout the time of the early church, there was a lot of heavy persecution. And that when John wrote this and told of the title of Christ, it was very controversial in the time of the early church, and I would submit it's probably still controversial today, that Jesus is Lord, that he is King of everything. Now this title would stand against their Jewish counterparts. They might have been thrown out of the synagogue, and indeed they were. The early church wasn't as fortunate as us to have the sanctuary. They probably met in graveyards, in sheds, and in basements. And they were heavily persecuted at that time, not only revealed by the Jews, but also by the Romans. there was a bishop named Polycarp, and in 155 AD, he was 86 years old. So if you think you can get out of it, you can age out of Christianity. No, no, no. He was 86 years old. And these Roman soldiers went up to him and said, just say that Caesar is Lord and we can spare you. We just want you to be spared. Just say Caesar is Lord and we won't have to persecute you. But Polycarp responded and said, no, I can't do that. I've had that relationship with Jesus. And I cannot deny that. And I have to say that Jesus is King of everything. Through John's imagery in Revelation, we see that he gives two titles to Christ. One is of the lion, and the other is a lamb. Now, when I think of a lion and a lamb outside of the Bible, I always remember those times when I was a kid, like a little kid in like first grade, where we would mark things on the calendar. Now, the saying goes, if April begins like a lion, it'll end like a lamb. Glad everyone got it. Okay, good. So we would mark on the calendar, you know, the days if it rained, or for instance this year, if it snowed, it would be a lion. And if it was sunny or overcast, it would be a lamb. And then we got the council of first graders together, and we would decide whether or not the month started with a lamb or the month will end like a lion. And most of the time, that saying actually came true. John shows us what the title King of Everything really means. First, the lion. That Christ is victorious. That just as a lion looks over the savanna in which it presides in its environment, just as a lion looks over its environment and has dominion over the prey, so too does Christ reign over all things and has dominion over all things. And then we look at a lamb, which shows Christ's meekness and his sacrifice. In Jewish custom, a lamb was often offered as a sacrifice to show, this is my repentant heart, so I'm going to give a lamb to show God that I am repentant, that I'm turning from my sin. So when we put those two meanings together, what John is saying is that through Christ's sacrifice, he is victorious. And that is one of the reasons why he is in the center of the throne. And shows that Jesus did not disappear. That in fact, death wasn't the end for him. That he reigned and Thomas saw him resurrected. And they also, all the disciples saw him ascend. And John, while he was on this island in Patmos, he sees Christ again in his glory as a lamb looking as if it had been slain. Now, I'm sure many of us have never been in a throne room. Has anyone ever been in a throne room? That's what I figured. The closest I've ever been was the Capitol building, being in the House of Representatives. But that really doesn't capture the majesty and the artistry and the imagery used in a throne room. And I think any earthly throne room wouldn't even compare to the throne room that John was in, the throne of God, and how vast and how awesome and glorious and magnificent it must have been. But in the center of that throne room, in the center of the throne, was Christ. And I think, if you caught it, that tells us the title of Jesus. If you caught it, if you saw it, that he is in the center of the throne. Jesus isn't another object of worship. We see that because Jesus is on the throne, he is receiving the worship along with the Father. That both are receiving worship. That both of them are being glorified. So Jesus isn't just an appetizer or an hors d'oeuvre. He's part of the main course. Hey, Carl, that's a lot of big high-talk theology. How does that apply to my life? Well, I'm glad you asked the question. Because it shows us that we are separate from God, in a sense that we are unholy. No one can get to the throne, and John gets so upset. Why? Because he recognizes that the creation, The thing that God had originally called very good has fallen, and it has not lived up to the full estate in which it was intended to be. That indeed it was fallen. And John recognized the sinfulness and the fallenness in the world we live in today. I'm sure you can see it too. That this world is broken, and that all of us have not lived to our full potential, and that all of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And so we see that Christ is separate from that. Nothing in heaven, on earth, or below the earth could get near the throne, but Christ could. So that tells us, if you caught it, if you saw it, that Christ isn't a creature. That, as it says in Colossians, that he is above all things, and in him all things hold together. Through this revelation, John is showing us that in the throne room, Jesus is the King of everything. And that because he is, he can approach the throne and we cannot. We can't. We are not good enough. We don't have the holiness as Christ did. God is good. That's great. All the time, right? But in response to that, we recognize that we are not good all the time. We can look at other people and either make ourselves look really good with a good title and focus on the good things. And John would tell us, don't compare yourselves to other people. Don't do it. Instead, compare yourself to Christ and look at his character. Look at his actions. Look at how he prayed. Look at the lessons he taught. Conform yourself to Christ. Conform yourself to his character. If you're going to reflect someone, if you're going to imitate someone, the person you want to do that is the one on the throne. And when we do that, when we look at how Christ interacted with people, how he remained gentle, how he never really got that angry at Peter when he knew Peter was going to betray him. He was so meek, and he could read the hearts of people, and he cared about people and loved people. And all of us have to recognize in response to Christ's love that all of us have not loved to the fullest. That we either have not loved God to the fullest or other people to the fullest. We haven't placed him first. So how does that apply that Christ is number one? It applies that indeed we aren't number one. And that we are to look to him and to be conformed and to be changed and to be molded by his actions and his character. And how can we do that? Carl, I need something else. I need another proof to prove that Christ is God, that he is the King of everything. You know, maybe I've just done so much in my life that I can't have that relationship. But there is a way. And it is what the elders and the angels said as they were worshiping the Lord. Worthy are you because by your blood you purchased for God people of every tribe, of every tongue, and of every nation, that through Christ they could be priests. Through Christ they could be made holy. So not only does the cross bring us salvation, not only is it the route of salvation that through the cross Jesus bore the sins of the world, but also through the cross it shows that Jesus is God. That he would take on the form of a human being and suffer and take upon himself the curse of humanity. Jesus lived the life we should have lived, and he died the life we should have died. And he did it of his own accord, of his own volition, of his own way. He wasn't coerced, and he did something we couldn't do ourselves. So it is the cross that proves that Jesus is the King of everything. Now the takeaway is the question I put to you. How will you respond to the cross? How will you respond to Jesus' sacrifice? And I submit to you, the best response is worship. And worshiping Christ in response to what he has done on the cross We place Him first, and we place Him as the example. And we try to imitate and to reflect His character and the things He has done. One thing I found, the things you appeal to, you become that. You become the things you adore. So if I started worshiping money, I would focus on money and maybe be stingy. Or if I focused on lust, I would become extremely passionate in the wrong areas. So if I focused on cleanliness, I would have a sanitizer bottle in my pocket at all times. You know, I'd be focused on being clean all the time. Or if I focused on being orderly and structured, one, I would go crazy in my room. But two, I would be so focused on being structured and organized that I would miss the bigger pictures. And so when we worship Christ, we place His character and His image first. And we place the victory we have in Him before anything else. And that changes us in the ways we need changed. If we're too pride, we become humble. If we're too guilty, we become assured that He meets each and every one of us, no matter where we are, no matter what we have experienced, that through worship of the living God, He interacts with us and intercedes for us and changes us for His purpose. And so the final point I want to make is about worship, the heavenly worship, the angels, the elders, the people there, the four living creatures, they're all worshiping. What does that say about our worship? It says that when we worship the Lord, when we worship Christ, we're not doing it of our own accord. We're not doing it just by ourselves. It's not just Christ the United Methodist of York Anna worshiping. We are worshiping with the entire heavenly host. We are worshiping with the angels. We are worshiping with those who have gone before us, with the saints who have gone before us. We are joining and partaking in the same worship. Granted, our language might be different. Granted, the songs might be different. The hymns might be different. But we are placing the same person first, God Himself and His character and the things He has done and how He interacts. That is worship. So this morning, as we conclude with our final song, may we focus on the victory we have in Jesus.